the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Last week and the previous week, the big issue was the Olympics in Beijing, China. Now, come to a conclusion, a spectacular conclusion, as a matter of fact, with the closing of the 29th Olympiad. Now we are looking to Denver, Colorado, where it's going to be all Democrats all the time, with the meeting of the Democratic National Convention. And regardless of your partisan affiliation, you just have to know that the dance of democracy never gets more public than this. We're looking at the two major political campaigns heating up with the two major party conventions coming never so closely in recent years as now, just 4 days apart. And so we have the Democrats meeting right now in Denver, Colorado, and just in a matter of days, we'll be looking to Minneapolis, Minnesota, where the Republicans will be meeting. And there is much to talk about here. On this program, politics is not our main concern, but we are concerned with intelligent Christian conversation about the things that matter. And the reality is that when you look at what is represented by these campaigns and what is being articulated in the party platforms, those documents, too, speak to things that matter. And we want to have an intelligent conversation about what the Democratic Party is up to, what the nomination of Barack Obama represents, the choice of Joe Biden as his running mate. But we're going to be looking specifically at the language of the platform. The platform is an intentional statement adopted by the convention, which means by the party, having to do with how it will present itself to the public in terms of its agenda for the future. A lot to think about today, a lot we'll be talking about. I want to invite you to join the conversation at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I also want to make the suggestion that I believe that most of us know how to watch the Olympics with our children. We pretty much know what to do. You sit and look at wonder at the athletic competition, at the incredible achievements, at the pageantry, and all the rest. But I think there are probably a lot of parents who say, I really don't know how to watch the political convention with my kids. I don't know if I want to. I'm going to suggest that you do want to, at least in some significant way, to help them to understand what is going on here, what is at stake. And we're going to be talking about some ways that parents can, with intentionality, think about how to have the right kind of conversation around the dinner table about the things that matter also that will be covered in this presidential campaign. We'll get to that in just a moment with my guest and friend, Dr. Russell Mohler. That conversation coming up in just a moment. First, to review some of the other issues in the news, at my website at albertmohler.com this morning, I posted an article entitled New God or No God, The Peril of Making God Plausible. I came across this book by Mitchell Silver, professor of philosophy at the University of Massachusetts in Boston, and it gets right to the heart of the great divide in contemporary theology. Now, one of the things that is often misunderstood about the contemporary theological context is that there are people who have more conservative and more liberal understandings of God. What Mitchell Silver helps to make very clear is that this new God, the God of the modern theologians, is not the personal self-existent God of the Bible at all. And he refers to this dichotomy between the old God, that's the God of the Bible, the creator, personal God, the God who wills and intends, the God who judges, the God who acts, and the new God, who is a philosophical concept. Now, one of the amazing insights in his book is that people who believe in this new God, who's not a personal God, a God that doesn't actually exist except as a concept, can continue to talk like people who believe in the old God. And that helps to explain why people who have abandoned biblical theism can continue to sing the hymns, can continue to recite the liturgy, participate in a Jewish sense in the traditions. I wrote this article because I wanted to help clarify the issues that are at stake. And people tend to underestimate the challenge represented by many of the revisionist theologies on the contemporary scene. And I've had a good response to this article already. It's on my website at albertmohler.com. And at a future date, we're going to be talking about what this means just in terms of how to discern what people are talking about when they use God language. Exactly what do they mean? What kind of follow-up question is necessary now in this confused age to make sure we even know what we're talking about when we're talking about God? Also, at my website today, I posted a book review of Howard Gardner's new book, Five Minds for the Future. Howard Gardner is one of the innovators in thinking about the idea of multiple intelligences, which I think is a genuinely helpful conception. In other words, we all know what IQ is, but there are people with amazingly high IQs that really aren't too much help in the larger society. They don't function particularly well in the society. There are people who have moderate IQs who are extremely successful. It's because, as Howard Gardner argues, there are different kinds of intelligences. There are certain people that walk in a room and know how to read it. There are certain people that, in a personal relationship, know exactly how to relate. They have high emotional or relational intelligence, as well as those who would have high factual or conceptual intelligence. In his new book, Five Minds for the Future, he suggests that a person who is going to be genuinely effective in the future has to develop these multiple minds or multiple intelligences. He refers to these in a very clear way as being very relevant to what it will take to be able not only to think but to relate in the future. These are diverse capacities, not a simple score on an IQ test. He refers to the creating mind, the disciplinary mind, the synthesizing mind, the respectful mind, and the ethical mind. Now, I believe that Christians who read this book will want to say a lot more than what Howard Gardner says. His is a secular analysis, but I think it's very helpful. As a matter of fact, I think you can read something like Paul's letters to Timothy and understand that he is speaking to Timothy of the need for multiple competencies. He needs to be ethical. He needs to be relational. He needs to understand how to teach as well as how to learn. And this is just a reminder to me as a seminary president and college president that we really need to be addressing these multiple kinds of learning in our educational process. And it's also, I think, a good reminder to parents. And one of the reasons why I commend this book is because I think it will help a lot of people to understand not only themselves, but perhaps their own wife and children in order to encourage not only the kind of natural learning that they may come with, but also to help know how to address the other kinds of learning as well. Again, I want to point out Howard Gardner comes from a secular viewpoint, and there's quite enough psychobabble out there, but this book really isn't about that. In fact, the book is published by the Harvard University Business School Press, because people in the business world know these multiple intelligences are required. You'll find the book review at albertmohler.com. The New York Times is out with a news story in yesterday's edition. It's entitled, A Teacher on the Front Line as Faith and Science Clash. Interestingly, the New York Times put this up along with a video presentation available at their website concerning the same story. Here's how it begins. It's located in Orange Park, Florida. That's a suburb of Jacksonville. It says, David Campbell switched on the overhead projector and wrote evolution in the rectangle of light on the screen. He scanned the faces of the sophomores in his Biology 1 class. Many of them he knew from years of teaching high school in this Jacksonville suburb had been raised to take the biblical creation story as fact. His gaze rested for a moment on Bryce Haas, a football player who attended the 6 a.m. prayer meetings of the Fellowship of Christian Athletes in the school gymnasium. Quote, if I do this wrong, Mr. Campbell remembers thinking on that humid spring morning, I'll lose him. Do you realize what's really going on here? This is the New York Times talking about what it takes for a teacher to basically seduce a student into accepting the theory of evolution. It's a massive story. As a matter of fact, just in the printout here, it goes 9 pages. You're talking about a lot of text devoted by the New York Times to this. It has to do with the Florida Department of Education's new standards that now explicitly require, for the first time, the public schools to teach evolution. And these new standards refer to evolution as, quote, the organizing principle of life science. The New York Times writes this, quote, in a nation where evangelical Protestantism and other religious traditions stress a literal reading of the biblical description of God's individually creating each species, students often arrive at school fearing that evolution, and perhaps science itself, is hostile to their faith. Now, I just have to step back and say, I wonder where they get that idea. Well, maybe from the New York Times, because the New York Times, in the second graph of this story, suggests that the problem faced by this teacher is that the students come to class believing that the Bible is factual. It says here, I'm going to quote directly, that these students, quote, were raised to take the biblical creation story as fact. You know, there is a battle for the minds out there, and never more so than when it comes to the understanding of origins. Because you cannot have a worldview, you cannot have a cohesive, coherent understanding of life unless you have a beginning of the story. And whether you are a secularist or an evangelical Christian, you have a creation story. It just so happens that for the secular worldview, that creation story is the story of naturalistic evolution, of a great accident that happened in space and time with the intersection of space and time and light and heat and matter. All of this is a reminder to us that we are living in a continual battle of worldviews. And when you start looking at what is at stake in that battle, just remember that there are people who are clearly focused on reaching the minds of children, your children, my children, reaching young minds in order to convince them that there is no essential dichotomy or essential conflict between evolutionary theory and, quote, faith, end quote. That's the word that's used in the New York Times. Well, I guess that all depends on what you mean by faith. But if your faith is trusting that the Word of God is absolutely true when it says that God created these species, then there is a conflict. There is an unavoidable conflict. We're coming back to talk about what's going on at the Democratic National Convention and why it should matter to you and to your family. We're going to think together about how intelligent Christians should think and talk about what goes on in Denver this week. The phone number is 877-893-8255. The first call could be yours on the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. I firmly believe that a good many parents in America are probably thinking right now, the last thing I want to do is sit down and watch what goes on at either of these national party conventions with my kids. Why in the world we do that? What are we going to talk about? Well, I hope that perhaps you'll rethink that and at least take the time to introduce your children to what's going on in this democratic process and help them to understand the difference between the style and the substance. Ask some basic questions about the worldview implications of what's being said. Help them to understand that that these party conventions are now long infomercials intended to present a public face of the two political parties and especially of their presidential candidates. It doesn't take much knowledge of American history to know that as recently as the 1960s, well, even into the 1970s, these conventions were places where decisions were actually made where you could go into the convention not sure who the party nominee would be for president and not sure for certain what the platform would look like. You don't have to go back very far. 40 years ago this summer, the Democratic National Convention almost fell apart with rioting in the streets of Chicago. The platform being a matter that literally brought out violence in the streets. You can go back to the 1960 Democratic National Convention, where there was no assurance going into the convention that John F. Kennedy would be the nominee of the party. All kinds of deals being made there. You could go to the Republican Convention in 1976. A great deal of drama between Gerald Ford and Ronald Reagan. You could go also to the Democratic Convention in 1980. That was largely about what didn't happen. The embrace of Ted Kennedy and Jimmy Carter that was expected that would have unified the party that really did not take place. Interesting, we mentioned Ted Kennedy. He's on the agenda of the Democratic Convention tonight. My guest here in the studio is my dear friend, Dr. Russell Moore, who is not only Dean of the School of Theology and Vice President for Academic Administration at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, he is also a person with a keen eye on all things political, and he is a former Democratic Party staffer. The truth is out.
That's correct. That's correct. And you are exactly right that these conventions are so boring now. The 1976 Republican Convention, now that was an exciting convention. This is, and even you think about the 1980s when you have Walter Mondale promising to raise taxes, nothing like that is going to happen at this year's convention.
No, everything is so tightly scripted. As a matter of fact, even the media who are a part of the scripting are admitting that it's highly scripted.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. But what will be interesting this year, I think, is that you've got the 40th anniversary of Robert Kennedy's campaign and assassination, 45th anniversary of the I Have a Dream speech culminating on the night Barack Obama accepts the nomination, you kind of have some of the movements of the 1960s for good and for ill coming to a culmination here at the Democratic Convention in Denver.
Now, just thinking about American history, something significant is going to take place tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of us who are political and social conservatives on so many issues, there is no one who perhaps has represented the other side more often than has Senator Ted Kennedy, the senior senator from Massachusetts. As we all know, he is fighting a very brave fight against a very aggressive form of brain cancer. He was not expected to be at the Democratic National Convention. Tonight in prime time, a Ken Burns film, 60 mm-hmm. minutes long, an hour long, is going to be shown commemorating his life. That is going to be introduced by his niece, Caroline Kennedy, the lone surviving family member of the family of John F. Kennedy, the late president. And now we know that Senator Kennedy, against doctor's advice, has flown to Denver and is there and is going to appear tonight and may speak. You got to know that's big drama in Denver.
Absolutely. At the same time that Caroline Kennedy herself seems to be coming into some type of political new reality. She was one of the co-chair of the vice presidential selection team for Barack Obama, and she's going to introduce him. It seems to be that she may be taking on the next generation of the Kennedy flame.
You know, you certainly don't know what the future has in store for Ted Kennedy's fighting this fight against cancer. But, you know, you're talking about conventions that happen once every 4 years and talking about someone who's advanced in age already. And so there's a sense in which, don't you think inevitably, that it's something like a valediction tonight?
I think so. I mean, you think about Ted Kennedy's played a major role at almost every Democratic convention. He's the Where Was George? Remember that in 1988?
Right.
And then that famous speech in 1980, The Dream Goes On and We'll Never Die. And this really is kind of a transitional turning point in the Democratic Party from your kind of old war horses of the 60s and 70s, Ted Kennedy being the last of those, to this new generation, Barack Obama, whatever's next.
Well, we're going to be talking about the Democratic Party's platform, available now in draft form. We have to say the convention has not yet voted on it, but it's going to happen. Again, all this is very tightly scripted. Let's talk just a little bit about what's been going on. I mean, tonight, Michelle Obama is going to be delivering a speech. What's that all about?
She is going to make Barack Obama look warm and fuzzy and not quite as aloof as he appears to many Americans. And so from what we're hearing, she plans to say that Barack Obama is just a man. And so she plans to talk about him in a kind of a self-deprecating kind of a way to make him appear to be more human. But that really goes to show kind of the problem. If she has to stand up and assure everyone he really is human, then there's a real disconnect problem.
Well, let me tell you what I'm confident is not going to happen.
What's
I'm
that?
Confident that she's not going to get up there and put her hands across her chest and do the flutter thing that we saw 4 years ago.
That's right, Teresa Hines.
From Teresa Hines Carey, where she talked mostly about herself rather than about her husband.
That's right.
I'm sure Michelle Obama is actually going to talk about her husband here.
But that was an especially weird first lady candidate. I don't think we're ever going to see anything like that again. She's probably going to be very well received, I think. She knows what she's doing. She's good on the campaign stump, and she's probably going to give an effective speech.
Graduate of the Harvard Law School, you know, someone who knows how to speak, how to make her case. I'm certain that's going to be very, very powerful tonight in terms of what they're trying to do. Again, this is an infomercial. And just in terms of pure bipartisanship, the next one's going to be a Republican infomercial. So you're going to see the public face put forth by these two campaigns. On Tuesday night, former President Bill Clinton's going to be speaking.
That's the fun one.
On foreign policy.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And I have to believe, just knowing how good Bill Clinton is at this, I have to believe that he is going to redeem himself in some way. He is going to come out four square for Barack Obama, have the crowds cheering. I just have to believe that's what he's going to do.
Yeah, you know, as someone who wrote one of the great biographies on him has said, you know, this is a man who absolutely has to be loved.
Yeah.
And who has the amazing ability to make his crowd just love him all the more.
Yeah, and he has to know. He has to do something to kind of recover after those primaries. And so does Hillary Clinton, and I think she will.
And we're talking Hillary Clinton on Wednesday night.
Yeah, and Hillary Clinton has already, she spoke to her delegates today, four square behind Barack Obama. She's expected to release her delegates to vote for Barack Obama. I think she's going to be kind of a warm and heroically received figure here. And I think the issue is going to be women's rights. She is speaking on the anniversary of the 19th Amendment of women's suffrage. She's going to stand up and I think kind of package herself as the hero of women and a historic figure as the first woman to win 18 million votes.
The fulfillment of the hopes and dreams of those who were the suffragettes of years past.
That's right. That's right. Not the kind of cynical figure that many received her as during the primaries.
Then, of course, on Thursday night is the acceptance speech by Barack Obama, and that is the climactic conclusion of a party convention. But by that time, the party platform's adopted. That's where we're going to look when we come back in just a moment. We're going to be looking at what the Democratic Party says it is committing itself to in terms of policies, looking to the 2008 race, but looking far beyond that to what it would do if indeed its presidential candidate and others running for national office are elected. This is a party platform that, unlike many, I would say, in years past, is notable for what it explicitly does say. And there's a lot of talk about that already. That's what we're going to be talking about when we come back. Share your thoughts about the Democratic National Convention and also how you intend to deal with it, perhaps even just in your family or in your workplace. Give me a call at 877-893-8255. You're listening to the Albert Miller Program.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back. My guest today, Dr. Russell Moore. We're having a great conversation about what's going on in Denver and what's being said in Denver, not just in terms of what's going to be said in terms of the speeches, but what's being said in the platform. The party platform is an official manifesto. The platform has a distinguished history in terms of American political progress, as the platform was literally the main means by which the parties, say a century ago, communicated to the public what they were all about. And now in the media age, the platform is sometimes lost in all the flurry of the personalities and the speeches, the pageantry on the floor of the convention, and that ought not to happen. One of the things that you must do as an informed voter, and I pray that you are an informed voter, is to take a close look at these party platforms. Now, the draft of the Democratic platform is out. Let me tell you, there's a lot of buzz out there. And the buzz is coming from people who say that this is a party that is trying to reach out to people, quote, of faith. That was big in terms of the language yesterday. Rally held. They have paid staffers who are really trying to reach out to people of faith. That's a major irritant to me because I don't believe there's anything such as faith without an object. Am I a person of faith? I'm a person of Christian faith. I don't have faith in faith. I have faith in God and the gospel. Those are very different things. But you understand culturally what they're trying to do here. I just want to read to you a few things out of the platform. This really sets the stage, I think, for understanding that we really are in a conflict of ideas. Just to take the first example, dealing with the issue of, homosexuals in the military. This is from page 31, line 41 of the Democratic draft platform. It says, "We will also put national security above divisive politics. More than 10,000 servicemen and women have been discharged on the basis of sexual orientation since the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy was implemented at a cost of over $360 million. Many of these forced out as special skills in high demand, such as translators, engineers, and pilots. At a time when the military is having a rough time recruiting and retaining troops, it is wrong to deny our country the service of brave, qualified people. We support the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and the implementation of policies to allow qualified men and women to serve openly, regardless of sexual orientation." Now, Russ Moore, remind me, but wasn't Bill Clinton the one who came up with the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy?
She sure was, but you have a different Democratic Party at work now than what Bill Clinton had put together. And also, I mean, these platforms are put together, as you know, by this coalition of interest groups all fighting to get their wording in there.
Well, this group got this wording in.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, and my guess is that this will be completely non-controversial on the floor of the Democratic Party, in terms of repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell. In terms of faith, this is what it says. There's an entire paragraph entitled Faith, page 44, beginning at line 24. "We honor the central place of faith in our lives. Like our founders, we believe that our nation, our communities, and our lives are made vastly stronger and richer by faith and the countless acts of justice and mercy it inspires." Period. End quote. So faith inspires. Again, there's no object to the faith here. It says, "We believe that change comes not from the top down, but from the bottom up, and that few are closer to the people than our churches, synagogues, temples, and mosques." Nothing really controversial there.
It's just religion as a form of social benefit.
Functional view of religion.
Yeah.
Okay. Then there's a statement that does encourage me. Russ, I have to tell you, there's something in this platform that is just really good. I'm going to credit Barack Obama with putting it in. And that's found on page 45 at line 37 of following on fatherhood. He's taking a little heat for putting this in from folks in the civil rights movement. What's going on there?
Well, I mean, you obviously have a crisis in American culture when it comes to fathers leaving. And Barack Obama has stepped up and spoken to this issue repeatedly, that you have too many dads abandoning their children. And you're right. This is encouraging, the fact that you have fathers missing and talking about cracking down on men who refuse to pay child support and so forth. That is a welcome development. I'm actually shocked that it was allowed to be put in here as fatherhood. I mean, you notice the way that
military
people are referred to as service members.
Right.
And so rather than just parenthood and parents who refuse child support. But I think it just goes to show how awful the problem actually is. You can't avoid it. It's to the point now where even a politically correct document like this has to speak to it.
But I'm just trying to be as fair as I know to be. That is an encouraging section of this. But then you get to abortion. And what begins and ends this statement is basically a statement that deals only with a woman's right to choose. It's all about the woman. It begins by saying the Democratic Party strongly and unequivocally supports Roe v. Wade and a woman's right to choose a safe and legal abortion regardless of ability to pay, and we oppose any and all efforts to weaken or undermine that right. It goes on and says the Democratic Party also strongly supports access to affordable family planning services and comprehensive age-appropriate sex education, which empowers people to make informed choices and live healthy lives. We also recognize that such health care and education help reduce the number of unintended pregnancies and thereby also reduce the need for abortions. Finally, it says the party strongly supports a woman's decision to have a child by ensuring access to and availability of programs for pre- and postnatal health care, parenting skills, income support, and caring adoption programs. Strong and unequivocal support of Roe v. Wade. That's where it begins, and that's where we'll pick up on the Albert Mueller Program. We'll be right back.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. You know, there's been so much discussion just in recent months, and this has come recurringly, but now and with a whole new drumbeat about a new evangelical voter, a new understanding, a new sense of openness to the Democratic Party on the part of evangelicals. You know, I have to say, we need to consider both political parties to be a part of a fallen world, but I wish we were really looking at the fact that both of these parties were genuinely turning to evangelicals and saying, we want to stand with you in terms of the sanctity of human life. And it's true that evangelicals are beginning to speak a new language and to broaden concerns to other issues as well. But, Russ, I just have to say that I believe that the sanctity of human life is the first issue of the hierarchy. And on that issue alone, the Democratic Party, I would argue, has shifted left, not right.
Oh, this platform is pathetic. It actually says we support a woman's right to have a child. Well, thank you. As though we need
a political
party.
It's amazing you would have
to
say that. Yeah. You know, as you said about another issue, its presence demonstrates that the party thinks it has to say that. What kind of party would have to say, we believe a woman ought to have the right to have a baby?
Yeah, and you know, in July, we had on this program a person who is on this committee, an evangelical Christian, Tony Campolo, who is now saying in the press, this actually is an olive branch to pro-life voters. That is shameful.
Well,
this is providing a smokescreen.
I also saw Joel Hunter, who made the statement that now pro-life people can vote for both parties in good conscience. Let me just read to you again, lest we miss this, the very first line of the Democratic Party's platform on abortion, it speaks of the Democratic Party's strong and unequivocal support of Roe v. Wade. Now, if you can sign on to a strong and unequivocal support of Roe v. Wade, you're not pro-life.
That's exactly, and then goes on to say, regardless of ability to pay.
Yeah.
And so not only are we to endorse Roe v. Wade, but we have to pay for it with taxpayer dollars.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and the thing about it is, you think about these new evangelicals everyone is talking about. It's not showing up in the polling data. And you look at the people they're talking to, it's the old kind of 60s
right.
Leftist evangelical Jesus people types like Tony Campolo.
Well, they were the people that were talking that way 4 years ago, 8 years ago, 12 years ago, 16 years ago.
Or a few young people that they find who are doing nothing. These aren't pastors. These aren't people who are leading people. These are people that they find to professionally say, yeah, we really think the Democratic Party and that we can live with this kind of pro-abortion rights stuff. It's just not showing up in the way people are actually living.
Now, I think it'd be very instructive for us to look at a comment made by the Democrat that right now that holds the highest elected office held by anyone of that party, and that is Nancy Pelosi, representative from San Francisco, and the Speaker of the House of Representatives. On Meet the Press yesterday, she was asked about the issue of abortion, and her response, well, let's just say it'll give us a lot to talk about. Let's listen to Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi.
I would say that as an ardent practicing Catholic, this is an issue that I have studied for a long time. And what I know is over the centuries, the doctors of the church have not been able to make that definition. And St. Augustine said at 3 months. You don't know. The point is that it shouldn't have an impact on a woman's right to choose. Roe v. Wade talks about very clear definitions of when the child, first trimester, certain considerations, second trimester, not so, third trimester. There's very clear distinct. This isn't about abortion on demand. It's about a careful consideration of all factors that a woman has to make with her doctor and her God. And so I don't think anybody can tell you when life begins. Human life begins.
You know, just to be very clear, I am not a Roman Catholic. I have studied at a Roman Catholic institution, and I know that the Roman Catholic Church is not unclear about when human life begins.
And Nancy Pelosi knows that, too. The Roman Catholic Church has been absolutely clear on this issue. How can she say this with any intellectual honesty? It's one thing to say, I disagree with the church. I do not think that a fetus or an embryo is a human being. But she's saying it doesn't matter. I mean, to say it doesn't matter whether or not this child is a child. And notice how she catches herself when she says the child, and moves on. That's a conscience that's very
absolutely
deliberately being papered
up. And, you know, there is a deliberate effort on the part of the Democratic Party to reach out to Catholics more than to evangelicals,
right,
because Catholics are understood as a crucial swing vote. And the Catholic voter has been committed, by and large, to a pro-life position consonant with the teachings of the Catholic Church that has certainly shifted the Catholic vote a good deal toward the Republican candidate rather than the Democrat. They want those Catholics back. But, Russ, I just have to tell you, watching this as an outsider, I can't believe this is going to work.
And it makes me think of Hubert Humphrey, that great old Democrat who used to say that a party is seen by how it treats those at the dawn of life and at the end of life, the most vulnerable, the aged, and the children. And you have to ask, where is the Democratic Party's conscience here? That's what's so heartbreaking to me.
Moving on in the platform to the issue of marriage, you kind of have to look deep within the document, but it shows up, for instance, in the section entitled A More Perfect Union. It begins in line 38 by speaking of being committed to ensuring full equality for women and support for the Equal Rights Amendment. Now, before we get to marriage, you know, is this 1972?
Well, again, it's interest group politics. Let's find something that's going to satisfy everybody around here. We'll throw this to the National Organization for Women and support ERA. They know ERA isn't coming back.
You know, I just have to say, these younger people who are going to be voting, you know, do they know what ERA is?
No. That's because you got the Woodstock generation now taking over.
Well, let's read on page 48, beginning at line 6. It says this: it is not enough to look back in wonder of how far we have come. Those who came before us did not strike a blow against injustice only so that we would allow injustice to fester in our time. That means removing the barriers of prejudice and misunderstanding that still exist in America. We support the full inclusion of all families. Now, here's where we have to listen very carefully. All families. That means you have here a definition of family diversity, just like the stuff with Heather has two mommies and Daddy has a roommate. These are all families. Lest we miss the point, it goes on, including same-sex couples in the life of our nation, and support equal responsibility benefits and protections. So this is calling for the normalization of other family forms, calling them families. We will enact a comprehensive bipartisan employment non-discrimination act. Now, we know what that looks like. It's something like ENDA. Then it says, we oppose the Defense of Marriage Act and all attempts to use this issue to divide us.
Take that, Bill Clinton.
Opposing the Defense of Marriage Act, signed into law by President Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
The last Democrat to hold that office. And the statement, which, by the way, let's just remember, says that states do not have to recognize same-sex marriages in other states. It doesn't even say. DOMA does not say there can be no same-sex marriage in America. It just says you can't coerce one state to recognize same-sex marriage performed in another state. The Democratic Party says, we want that out. We demand that it come out. We are opposed to the Defense of Marriage Act. Well, there's a clear issue that I think most Americans will want to pay attention to as well. Back to final thoughts in just a moment. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. As always, it's been a privilege to have Russell Moore as my guest. He's often guest host on this program as well. Russ, if you think about sitting down and watching the Democratic National Convention tonight and in successive nights, what are you going to be looking for?
I'm going to be looking for what kind of subtle hints and messages are being sent. You think about Barack Obama's 2004 keynote address. That really showed the way that the party wanted to try to address mainstream Americans, getting beyond red state and blue state. What kind of themes are they trying to send? Well, what are the subtle messages that they're trying to weave in with messages about faith and so forth? That's what I'm looking for.
Very interesting. Something's happened just in the last few hours. The last couple of days, I think, is very interesting. First of all, The party has released information about some of the people who will be doing the prayers at the mm-hmm. convention. And here's a headline from the Washington Post. Pastor who opposes abortion to deliver DNC's closing prayer. That's Joel Hunter, the Florida pastor, registered Republican, he says. He opposes abortion and, of course, at one point, very shortly, was heading the Christian Coalition. Now mm-hmm. he says that he thinks that the Democratic Party presents some kind of viable option for evangelicals. Let me just ask you, how can you be pro-life and sign on to a statement that says strong and unequivocal support for Roe v. Wade?
Denies the personhood of babies? I don't know how you do it in good conscience.
The other thing that amazes me about this is that he and so many others have been criticizing conservative pastors being too political.
Oh, I know.
And he's the one showing up to pray at a major
Donald
Democratic
Miller,
convention.
The emerging church guy, too.
Yeah, that's amazing. Meanwhile, Cameron Strang, 32-year-old editor of Relevant magazine, very interesting kind of edgy magazine in the evangelical world, kind of leaning toward the emerging world.
Mm-hmm.
He was asked to pray, and he withdrew because in good conscience he said he just didn't want to be choosing a political side. This is what he said. He said, "It wouldn't be wise for me to be seen as picking a political side when I've consistently said that both sides are right in some areas and wrong in some areas." His father, Stephen, founded the magazine Charisma. You're looking at a family dynasty there. You know, I just have to say, a 32-year-old young man asked to do this, and whether it's the Republican or the Democratic convention, you know, I just have to think this is probably a wise move on his part.
Absolutely.
And looking at this, I have to say,
what you mean, yeah.
Hats off to Cameron Strang for withdrawing from this, because in this highly politicized day, to do something like this, it is sending a clear signal. And, you know, in a fallen world, we've got to be very, very careful about that kind of thing, because let's face it, and I'm not just speaking about the Democrats here, but about both parties, and that is that they exist in order to further their own interests. Now, right now, it's clear that the Republican Party sees associating with conservative evangelicals and with issues of sanctity of human life and the integrity of marriage as being in the party's benefit. And for that reason, that's where I have been attracted in terms not of partisan affiliation, but in terms of making an electoral choice between the options available. The Democratic Party has been sending the signal, and I have to say, in this platform is sending it again, that it's associating in a very different place. Back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. You're listening to the Albert Miller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.